Welcome to Pet Food Advisors. I'm Tracy Hotchner, a pet wellness advocate with a special interest in dog and cat nutrition. I wrote the Dog Bible and the Cat Bible, but I'm still learning every day about what goes into a good, healthy diet for our pets. I'm here with pet food experts to help unravel the mysteries of pet diets so you can make thoughtful decisions about feeding your own cats and dogs. If you want to stay in the know when it comes to doing what's best for your pets, follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find me at Tracy Hotchner. That's Tracy with an I-E. Have a pet-related question or comment? Post it on my page or tweet me. Pet Food Advisors is a production of Pet Media, Inc., with opinions and information that are the sole responsibility of the expert guests who offer them. I also produce the philanthropic New York Dog Film Festival, sponsored by the Petco Foundation, which I take around the country, celebrating the love between dogs and their people while benefiting the animal welfare groups that bring them together. Get more information at dogfilmfestival.com and the new catfilmfestival.com. This show is brought to you in part with the generous support of Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian who has created a variety of low-dust litters for the health of all members of the family, so everyone can breathe easier. Precious Cat has a litter for the special needs of kittens, for senior cats, for long-haired, and for those with out-of-litter box problems, who can get back in the box with Cat-Attract litter. Precious Cat's Touch of the Outdoors is a litter made with field grasses grown in their own fields, bringing the natural scent of the outdoors to provide environmental enrichment for indoor cats. Precious Cat's newest health monitor litter has broken new ground by allowing people to find the early signs of kidney disease in their kitties and intervene before damage is done, prolonging the quality and length of their kitty cat's lives. I am here with Brandon Schultz and his book, Cooking for Two, Your Dog and You. Brandon, delicious recipes for you and your favorite canine. It looks so yummy, the mac and cheese in particular. Tell me a little bit about what inspired you to write this delightful book.
Sure. This is actually a sequel to Cooking for Two, Your Cat and You. And that started almost as a joke from a former colleague of mine when we were just talking about book ideas, and he said, there are a lot of crazy cat people out there, and you're one of them. You should write a cookbook for them. And I turned that joke into a reality, and he was a little bit jealous when he found out. So he is credited in the acknowledgments. That's the best I could do for him. And then the book did fairly well, so the publisher wanted the follow-up for dogs. And that's how we got Cooking for Two, Your Dog and You.
Well, I'd love to talk about how you found this marvelous dog while you were roaming the Amalfi Coast. I actually had a Cocker Spaniel whom I named Amalfi because his sister Golden Retriever was named Roma, and I spent many years of my life in Italy. So I love the fact that you actually brought this dog home from near Capri, and he moved to Rome, Philadelphia, and Brooklyn, where he currently lives with you and the cat. How did you wind up bringing this fascinating-looking dog home?
Yeah, I mean, that's really funny that your dogs are Amalfi in Rome, since that's where Chase lived. I was living in Rome for school for a year in college in 2014 and 15, and I'm sorry, 2004 and 5. And I took a vacation to the Amalfi Coast for a long weekend, and this stray dog was following me around everywhere I went. Day after day, he would show up no matter where I was, far away from other places. And the people I was traveling with were joking that he's the dog that follows me home and I should take him. And then on the last night that we were there, we were waiting for a bus to take us to a train. We had about an hour to kill, so we went back to sit by our favorite fountain and get one last gelato and Amalfi. And there was Chase on the fountain drinking water out of it. And the girl that I was with finally convinced me that I should take the little guy. I mean, he was a mess. He was obviously a stray and he'd been all over the area. So he took the bus, he took the train, we traveled through the night, and got home around 3 in the morning in Rome, to the surprise of my roommate, since I had a dog. And, you know, we were in student housing in Rome, so we were not allowed to have pets. We were all studying abroad, so we hardly knew each other, and I was not the type you would suspect of breaking the rules and bringing a dog in, but I did. And then he stayed with me there for a little while, and then he flew home to the States after a very difficult process.
How in fact, difficult was the process?
It was pretty difficult. If I had not been there for as much time as I was, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But I had the proper amount of time to get him the right vaccinations before leaving, the right pet records from an Italian vet, to go to the embassy and swear if I brought him out, I would never bring him back, which was, I thought, an unusual requirement.
How interesting.
And to get written permission from a U.S. embassy that he would be allowed in when we hit customs.
Wow.
Yeah, it was and he had to have an airline ticket, although he was not allowed to ride in the cabin with me at the time.
Well, they were pretty strict with you.
They were very strict.
And yet he made it. Now, how old is he now?
He made it. So, well, because he was stray, we don't know his exact age.
Oh, right.
But when I found him, the vet looked at his teeth and said he was probably between 3 and 4, and that was in the autumn, so we made his birthday April. And that would make him, he'll be 16
wow.
this coming April.
That is so cool. I mean, you know, it's one of those things you learn about street dogs the world over, that they are very hardy. The ones who survive are truly survivors. But this guy did more than survive. He thrived. And he was
he
was a partial inspiration for the book is beautiful. It's got wonderful photos in it that sometimes have nothing to do with the food. They're just great photos with great quotes, some information, you know, like female dogs bite twice as often as males do, things that we wouldn't necessarily know. And the recipes themselves are super yummy, tasty, like sweet potato fries. I mean, oven-baked fries. Mm-hmm. What a cool idea, because they really are. I mean, sweet potatoes are a well-known palliative for dogs, for their digestion, and they're much better for us than white potatoes. So how did you come up with this recipe? Did you actually already just make it for humans and decide, oh, let the dog have fun too?
You know, that's pretty much it for almost all of them. All of these recipes really are simple foods that most of us are eating fairly regularly. Maybe not all of them, but most of them. These are meals or foods that we prepare for ourselves anyway. And in order to make it healthy or healthier and safe for your dog or your cat, you really just need to be a little bit more mindful of the ingredients because the pets have smaller systems. And we sort of let ourselves get away with things we shouldn't, like too much sugar, too much fat, too many white foods when they could be brown or orange. But you put that food into a smaller system, like in your dog or your cat, and the effect is compounded dramatically. So in doing this book, you really just have to be careful to use healthier ingredients, and so it turns out to be a benefit for you, too. So, of course, many of us make French fries, and people have really been turned on to sweet potatoes lately, and I think more and more people are making sweet potato fries. So this is something that would just fit into your regular life anyway, and as long as you follow the instructions in the book, then it's safe to share with your pet, too.
Well, one of the
and it's important. Go ahead.
One of the things that really struck me about it, I like to make sweet potato baked fries, and I, you know, just coat the baking sheet, the like cookie sheet, with some olive oil, and I kind of toss them with salt and pepper. But you do something really interesting with cornstarch, and I'm really interested in that. And that's like a really cool trick. I mean, of course, it makes it the dog would be thrilled either way. But how did you come up with that? What does that do for the sweet potatoes? You say to put them in a bag and toss them with olive oil and the cornstarch, just a teaspoon of it for 3 sweet potatoes. What does the cornstarch do?
Right. Yeah, so it's not really doing very much flavorfully with the sweet potato, but it's giving you better odds of a crunch. A lot of times people will make their own French fries with white potato or sweet potato, and they might come out mushy.
Yes.
Or they might come out completely burned.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to get that crunch.
Yes.
The cornstarch helps to make them crunchy without having to cook for that extra time where you might feel compelled to keep cooking until they blacken and you ruin them.
Yes.
The cornstarch helps give it a crunch as it cooks up.
So where did you learn
that? To do that effect. Oh, gosh. I don't know. You know, this is my 3rd cookbook, and I've been cooking with my grandparents for longer than I can remember. I think it's just something I picked up somewhere.
It's so clever because, you know, one always has an eye peeled for those, like, you know, that magazine Real Simple, like things that are really tasty but simple.
Right.
Then, of course, you go to make them, and they're not simple at all in those situations. Oh, just make sure you have some chorizo sausage. You have to go, like, to the Hispanic market to get it. But I don't understand, if you put the olive oil and the cornstarch in the bag and you shake up these 3 potatoes, how does it coat all of the sweet potatoes?
It doesn't coat evenly. It's just like any kind of, if you remember shake and bake, you're just doing your best to get something all around the outside of it. I mean, if you really wanted to make a laborious system and lay it out and roll each fry through a little bowl, you could do that, but, you know, you'd be covered in oil and crumb, and you're really just looking for a little bit of crunch, so it doesn't have to be fully coated. You just get that on there and get the good bite.
Yes, I do remember that ad, Shake and Bake, and I helped.
Yeah.
So there's another really cool one. I happen to be a popcorn lover, and my dogs are mad for popcorn, so when I make it and I'm sitting in front of Netflix, it's one for me, one for Maisie, one for Wanda. One for me, one. It's like I don't get much popcorn. But you have this clever idea of the optional tablespoon of peanut butter. Can you talk about that idea?
Yes, that makes it so much more fun, but also a word of caution, so much messier, especially if your dog likes to play with food at all. So you want to put it on a surface that it's okay that peanut butter gets on it. So your kitchen floor, you're not going to bring this into the, eat it in the living room over the carpet with your pup if you're putting the peanut butter on it. But, yeah, I mean, everybody knows that dogs love peanut butter. You put them inside of some dog toys. You disguise medicine in peanut butter sometimes. And the dog is probably going to eat popcorn anyway, but it's just kind of a fun thing to make. And, you know, people like popcorn when it's treated differently. If we make caramel corn or we make different things around the holidays where we clump it together and candy it up a little bit. So popcorn is, let's say, the least unhealthy way to candy up your popcorn and make it a little bit more fun. But, and so that makes it best for your dog, too.
But do you have to melt the peanut butter, like, in the microwave and drizzle it over it like you would the butter, although you do point out that maybe the butter is a bit much for the dog to take in?
Yeah.
Do you have to melt it first? I mean, how do you mix it in? I'm trying to do these things. The hell with the dog. I want to try these things. They're so yummy. But I'm like, wait. A tablespoon of peanut butter, how do I get it to, like, mix with the rest of the popcorn once it's popped?
All right, so part of it depends on where you keep your peanut butter. Some people refrigerate it, some people don't. If you refrigerate it, it's likely much harder, and you might want to let it sit out for a little while first. I don't microwave mine, but I also don't refrigerate my peanut butter. So it's somewhat soft. And listen, honestly, this is a messy recipe even to make because you're going to use your hand. If you can use the spoon with the popcorn and peanut butter in a bowl for the rest of your life, and you're just going to be pushing one lump of peanut butter around and around. So you're going to use your hand a little bit and make a mess and just kind of smear it around and pretend you're a kid.
Yeah,
making a mess.
having a good time. There's another one that you came up with, which is really interesting. Cottage cheese and fruit. I think a lot of us know the diet plate at, you know, Schraff's was cottage cheese and fruit. It was usually some pretty dreadful canned peach. But in this case, you show some apple and strawberry and banana, all of which are fruits that a lot of dogs love. My dogs get cottage cheese for one of their meals every day as their protein source to just be a little lighter on the planet and not give meat in both meals. But I like this idea of the fruit and the cottage cheese mixed together because some dogs aren't such fruitarians, but it's very good for them. So you talk about making it small for them, chopping it up.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, that's a product of not knowing what size dog every individual reader is going to use. You know, your dog might be able to eat half a banana in one bite.
Correct.
And it's not a problem. Someone else's chihuahua might eat one-fifth of a banana and cut up in little pieces.
Yeah, right.
And there is a note about bite sizes and portion sizes in the front of the book to give you a little bit of guidelines. The book itself was made for Chase's size. He fluctuates around 18 to 20 pounds, so he's a medium to smaller dog. So you can increase your portion size if your dog is bigger, decrease it if it's smaller, and the same with the bite size. And as we're mixing it up, it's exactly like you said. The dog might get a little bit picky and leave part of it aside, and then you're just wasting it. You mix it all together, and you can bet your dog's just going to lap the whole thing up like a soup.
Which is a really good idea. Now, this is a very all-American cookbook, mini meatloaf and mashed potatoes and mac and cheese and cheeseburger. And I'd like to know, how does Chase from Amalfi feel about the fact that you don't have anything particularly Italian in here?
Yeah. There's no ravioli in this book.
No. There is a frittata. There's one frittata. But on the other hand, it's spinach and feta, which is too chic for the Italians. They'd have mozzarella and, I don't know, basil. So
yeah,
you didn't respect his origins very well.
I did not. Let's hope he doesn't remember. He was a young guy when he left, so maybe he's been here long enough that he doesn't remember the food there. On the other hand, he was also eating scraps off the street, so I think he's doing better having meals now.
Of course he is. Of course he is. I was just surprised that you didn't bring a little Italian flavor into some of the – but then you want it to be very all-American and very simple and not adorned and something that people and kids and dogs – I mean, you don't mention it, but I mean, these would be great kid meals for big people, little people, and dogs. I mean, they're all things that kids could love, right?
Exactly right, and pets are kids to many, many people, so this isn't that different. You could use it for your kids who might be picky eaters because everything in here is simple, and if you use the pet recipe, you're taking out a lot of the spices because that's where potential danger lies for your pets.
Yes.
And you're taking onions and garlic, which are things that we as adults love, but a lot of kids don't.
That's right.
And the animals absolutely cannot have. So a lot of the pet recipes, it's funny you say that, are really good for your kids, which a lot of people consider their pets. And that does lend itself to the reason that this food is very simplistic and all-American is because if you look at Asian cuisines, if you look at French cuisines that are full of fatty ingredients, you know, white creams and butters galore, even Italian food that has a lot of acidic ingredients in it, some of these things are just not worth the risk for the pet. Especially for the audience for these books, which is not the serious pet food maker. You know, there's a whole industry of people who make, like I think you do, make real nutritious meals for your pets to eat regularly, whereas these books are safe food, but not designed to feed your pet every day from this book. These are special occasion, fun time, cute thing to do here and there.
Yeah, and also make sure that you get a decent dinner out of it, too. I don't actually make my own pet food. I make the sort of the protein with whatever random vegetables are around, and I'll get, you know, ground turkey or ground chicken. I used beef for a while, but then I realized, oh, my God, it's so fatty. Never mind. I love the idea of making something that, like, the you know, rice and eggs, cheesy eggs and rice. Looks so yummy. So I think the pictures are also terrific. They're very appealing. So if you show this to your human child and said, would you like this for dinner? You know, Fido's going to join us. You could see a kid picking out the picture he likes, and maybe you get your human kid to eat a lot better than they would be otherwise. I think you did a great job, Brandon. I think the story of Chase and his road from Capri to Rome and back to Brooklyn is pretty terrific. I'm delighted that he's lived such a long and nutritiously complete life. Congratulations on Cooking for Two, Your Dog and You. I hope loads of people have the fun of trying these recipes.
Thank you so much, and thank you for looking through it and hopefully making some of the foods for you and your kiddos.
Absolutely. This show has also been supported by Best Pet RX, a unique compounding pharmacy for pets in New York City. They can turn any medication for dogs and cats into a custom flavored oral paste, chewable tablet, or a liquid that your pet will actually like. And Best Pet RX will keep trying formulations at no extra charge and offers same day delivery in New York City and overnight delivery anywhere else so that your pet can happily take the medication she needs to get well and stay well. Support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. If you're concerned about over-vaccinating your pet, whether young or old, VaxaCheck can help you and your veterinarian make the best decision about vaccinating in your individual situation. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind.